It was a guy named Nick Lucas who was the first to put a guitar solo on record in 1922. Lucas learned guitar, banjo, mandolin, and ukulele early in life, and by the age of 10, young Dominic Antonio Nicola Lucchese was busking on trains. Nick quickly moved on to cafes, vaudeville, radio, and in less than a decade sold some 84 million records. Nick Lucas was primarily an easygoing crooner and banjo player, billed as the singing troubadour. He had a model of Gibson guitar named for him, and in 1932, he re-recorded his hit from a decade earlier, Teasin' the Frets. Nick Lucas, in 1932, reprising his Teasing the Frets from a decade earlier, the first solo recording of a guitar in America. I'm Dave Radlauer. This is Pioneers of Jazz Guitar on Jazz Rhythm. Next is George Van Epps. Van Epps was a significant pioneer in quiet legend among jazz guitarists. He performed on radio and records with the swing orchestras of Freddie Martin, Benny Goodman, Ray Noble, and others. Notably, his father, Fred Van Epps, was one of the first and best-selling ragtime-era banjo players on record, and Fred Van Epps was later a banjo manufacturer and sound recordist. So even more than his three brothers, who all became professional musicians, George Van Epps was a child prodigy, awarded his Musicians Union license at age 11 by special exemption. Called by a fellow musician, one of the most talented persons I ever met, among George Van Epps' hobbies were musical instrument design and modification, building working miniature locomotives, steam-powered locomotives just inches long. And apparently, just as a hobby, George studied advanced aeronautics. He designed, built, and piloted his own flying boat as a hobby. What a guy. Van Epps' guitar style combined chords with single-string runs, like slightly earlier masters, Carl Kress and Eddie Lang. Van Epps idolized Lang. He'd known and worked with him, But George was a remarkable innovator and stylist in his own right from an early age. Van Epp's musical brilliance put him in heavy demand with the best-known names in music through the 30s and 40s. By his own estimate, one year he made 2,200 sides, most of them uncredited. Van Epp developed not only his own style, but a completely radical harmonic system and method for playing guitar. And in the late 30s, in partnership with the Epiphone Guitar Company, he invented a guitar that added a seventh bass string and published a method for playing it. The added bass string gave his guitar richer chord textures, stronger bass for rhythm, and expanded its range, making it what Epps himself called a lap piano. Among Van Epp's innovations was adapting techniques from classical guitar that enabled him to simultaneously play melody, harmony, and bass rhythm while he connected his chords with constantly moving inner voices. And like the best early pioneers of jazz guitar, he alternates between single string and chord articulation of the melody. Epps then bolsters his single notes with two or three supporting notes underneath. The best solo representation I could find of George Van Epps is this Once in a While from the early 50s. The tune Once in a While, the terrific guitar pioneer and innovator, George Van Epps. In the late 30s, Van Epps moved west, made music for movies and television, recorded for the Capitol, Columbia, and Concord jazz labels, and for decades continued his extraordinary experiments in music and aeronautics. And before passing in the 1990s, George Van Epps partnered on several albums with guitarist Howard Alden, who adopted Van Epps' seven-string guitar style and method. This is Pioneers of Jazz Guitar on Jazz Rhythm. I'm Dave Redlauer. Thanks for joining me. Now we turn to the outstanding guitarist, Carl Kress, who was very successful in New York in the late 20s and early 30s. For nearly a decade, Eddie Lang, Dick McDonough, and Carl Kress pretty much locked up all the choice recording work in top New York bands like the Dorseys, Miff Mole, and Red Nichols. But upon Eddie Lang's sudden death at age 30, McDonough and Carl Kress were in even heavier demand for recording and radio gigs. Kress was widely respected and hired by Frankie Trumbauer and Paul Whiteman for records with Bix Beiderbecke, an accomplishment that on its own seems to have granted a kind of immortality to guitarists of the late 20s. Kress had a long career and what seems like a very pleasant life. For a while, he was owner of the Onyx Club, one of New York City's hottest night spots. He had his own orchestra, appeared widely on radio, including frequently with Jack Benny and later on television, and enjoyed a long marriage to Helen Carroll, a vocalist with the Satisfiers Vocal Harmony Group. Kress was originally a banjo player, but he later made use of tenor banjo tuning as he developed an innovative guitar style. He expanded the range and versatility of the instrument, introducing unique chordal and tuning techniques. His buoyant rhythms, rich harmonics, and inventive style inspired many guitarists to adopt his sound. Of the early pioneers, Kress made guitar shine the brightest in the duet form, though surprisingly, he was often satisfied to be the backup guitarist, sometimes to Eddie Lang, to whom he was closest in style and outlook, or George Barnes, with whom he later had a long partnership, or backing Dick McDonough, as in these 1937 duets, Stage Fright and Chicken a la Swing. Thank you. amazing duets from guitarists Dick McDonough and Carl Kress in 1937, Chicken a la Swing and Stage Fright. Carl Kress spent his later years in the West doing tons of session work for Capitol Records, his band broadcasting on radio and television, and he enjoyed a long partnership with guitarist George Barnes before passing in 1965. To me, the gradual migration of guitar to a central place in jazz and popular music is an Only in America story. The guitar offered open-ended musical possibilities to a generation who came of age in the 1920s and 30s. The instrument itself was malleable in design, harmonic structure, and number and arrangement of strings. And in the case of George Van Epps, he bent not only the tuning, but the very form of the instrument itself to his will. Like other strummed and plucked instruments, the guitar was a late-coming immigrant to American music. But once it was welcomed and embraced, American initiative and ingenuity created the new forms, fresh voices, and inventive guitar styles we've been hearing this hour. Now, the next program in the series will explore the revolutionary innovations of Charlie Christian, who introduced the electric guitar in 1939. And while Christian's amplifier heralded the future of the guitar in jazz and American popular music, it also brought an end to this style of rather sweet, elegant, one might even say a Baroque era of jazz guitar between 1926 and 39. And of course, my focus on the pre-World War II era has excluded several significant post-war innovators. Les Paul, Herb Ellis, Wes Montgomery, Barney Kessel, and Joe Pass, along with a dozen others, who are unfortunately outside the scope of this program, and I've addressed Django Reinhardt elsewhere. So please join me next time for the dramatic story of how Charlie Christian introduced electric guitar to jazz and American popular music. At the Jazz Rhythm website, you can listen to this series again, hear other Jazz Rhythm programs you might have missed, or learn more about early jazz. At Jazz Hot Big Step, that's all one word, jazzhotbigstep.com. Jazz Rhythm is produced by Rhythm Productions, offering voiceover services and professional restoration of rare tapes and discs to digital. Finally, from 1939, here's Peg Leg Shuffle, one of Carl Kress's best solo recordings. I'm Dave Radlauer. That's Jazz Rhythm. Thanks for listening.